Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can I welcome you to this fifth session of the open floor hearing in connection with the application for development consent for an underground gas storage facility at Preesall Saltfield, Lancashire. My name is Paul Hudson. I'm an examining inspector in the Planning Inspectorate. And on my left is Emrys Parry, and on my right, Libby Gorth, similarly examining inspectors. We constitute the panel of three appointed to consider this application, and formally we are the examining authority. Now, the examination of this application is drawing to a conclusion. We have 6 months in which to carry out the examination, and it formally closes a week today on the 25th of October. This is a relatively new process. It's largely a written one, and over the past 6 months we have received a substantial amount of written material, principally from the applicant, of course, but also from those of you who've been making representations to us about particular issues. During that 6 months, we've also held a number of hearings into particular topics. Those were quite recent. And we visited the site here and on the other side of the estuary on numerous occasions. Now, when the examination period comes to an end, say in a week's time, the formality is that we as the panel then have 3 months in which to reach our recommendations and to write a report to the Secretary of State. And it will be his decision, based on our recommendations and advice, whether or not to confirm the order which is in front of us. So the purpose of this hearing, this open floor hearing, is to give those who have registered as interested parties at the beginning of the process an opportunity to put to us directly any additional points that they wish to, over and above the written material that we've already received. So, as I say, this hearing is principally for those people who are sort of part of the process, if I can put it that way. They're registered interested parties. But we are happy to also hear from anyone else who wishes to speak once interested parties have had their turn. Now, I stress that this is, say, a new process, and this is not a public inquiry, and this meeting is not a sort of a debate or a Q&A session, but it's a formal part of the examination process. And the way we conduct these sessions is to invite those who wish to speak to us to do so from the table in front of us. And as I've indicated, really sort of adding to points that they've already put to us some time ago in writing. So to that extent, we expect any presentations to be brief, to build upon material that we already have. And indeed, those of you who are speaking, if you find that a point has already been made, there's no need to repeat it, but just say, "I agree," or words to that effect, because it doesn't really add a great deal if we've already sort of got the point well lodged in our minds and fully appreciative of it. I think finally I'll say that there are representatives of the applicant here with us today, and our intention is to give the applicant an opportunity to comment at the end of this hearing, which is really at the end of the session this evening. It's entirely up to them. They don't have to speak, but it's an opportunity, if they wish to comment on any points which have been made to us over the course of these oral hearing sessions. Now, in terms of this afternoon, I've been notified of two registered interested parties who wish to speak, Mr. Tucker and Mr. Pickup. So can I just confirm whether there are any other interested parties? These are registered interested parties. You should have a white badge if you're a registered interested party who wish to speak. Okay. Are there any other members of the public then who wish to speak this afternoon? Okay. Well, I'll come back at the end and see how we are. But at the moment, we have two people who wish to speak. So could I ask Mr. Tucker to come forward to the table and join us?
I have a feeling I've done this before.
You may well have done. I know I have, so.
Yes. I will try and be very brief. Really, it's just an elaboration of the points.
Could you just formally introduce yourself and where you're from?
Yep. My name's Mike Tucker. I live just round the corner on Car End Lane. I'm a retired professional engineer, and I used to work for the Central Electricity Generating Board and latterly at ICI on a major hazards plant.
This is at Thornton?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, as was, yes.
Yeah.
Firstly, the project itself. It has been quoted that it's in the national interest that we have gas storage, and I don't debate that. What I do debate is that the fact that there are alternative sites, for example at Barrow and Portland, which are offshore and not adjacent to any centres of population. In my view, the site has only been chosen because the caverns can be at a shallow depth of about 1,000 feet or 300 odd metres, and the storage pressure is close to that of the national gas transmission system. And in my view, the facility is not is more likely to be used as a trading facility as opposed to be in the national interest as kept for storage until the Russians, you know, shut off the gas pipelines or something of that ilk. Geology, I've little knowledge of geology, but my understanding is that even now, after about 10 years, there have been few proper boreholes drilled. But I do emphasise that I'm not an expert in geology. The quantity of gas to be stored, and at about 75 bar, as I understand it, which is about 1,000 PSIG, it's 650,000 tonnes. And I don't know about other personnel here, but I have difficulty imagining that amount. As I mentioned, I used to work for ICI. On a major hazards plant, the VC4, the vinyl chloride 4 plant, the largest vessel on there was a storage sphere of 2,500 tonnes, and that was about 18 metres diameter, 60 metres diameter. And translating, I mean, it was a big vessel, and translating that into the 650,000 tonnes, it's about 260 of those spheres. It is a massive quantity of gas. The original application was for 2 million tonnes, and I'm going back to 2002, 2003 now. I did speak to the chief executive of Halite at one of the open sessions they held around the Over Wye area, and he couldn't guarantee to me that they wouldn't, if this was approved, they wouldn't get another application for a similar amount, and before we knew where we were, we'd be back to 2 million tonnes again. Moving on to operation and security. The operation, however careful an operator is, accidents do happen through human error or whatever that lead to disaster, and you've only got to look at BP as a case in point. The classification of the project, if it were to go ahead, it must be construed as a major hazards plant. And as such, it would be my view that it would be impossible for the footpath along the River Wye to stay open. You know, I think Halite have said it would stay open, but I just cannot see from a security or a safety point of view that would be viable. Finally, under operation and security, the evacuation in the event of an incident. In this area, really, there are only two ways out. That's on the so-called A road, the A588. It really, in my view, is not an A road. It's a country lane. If you go from here to Lancaster, and there are parts, it's just not an A road. So you've got, in the event of an incident, there would be local people trying to get out, either to the north or to the south, or the emergency agencies trying to get in. And a few years ago, I think 2 or 3 years ago, there was a serious accident on the Shard Bridge over the River Wye. And the police shut the bridge, and chaos reigned for about 2.5, 3 hours. It was a traffic deadlock. And therefore, the infrastructure here is just not suitable for evacuation and the access of emergency services. In Fleetwood, the situation is possibly worse. There's only one way out, and that's to the south. And again, that is a major problem in the event of an incident. Finally, local implications. As I understand it, there are some 80,000 plus people living within 3 miles of the proposed facility. And I can't express strongly enough that the application seems to totally ignore the implications of that fact. The construction time. None of us like, if we're in a nice house somewhere, none of us like really having a development next door to us. But with the worst will in the world, that's only going to last 6 months probably. You know, while a new house is built, if a planning application were approved. In that context, I understand the construction period could be 10 years with us. And during that time, there will be noise, disruption with HGVs going up and down. It would completely disrupt the whole locality for that sort of period of time. Looking towards, if the project were approved, as I understand it, the proposed life of the facility would be some 30 years. And I just wonder what's going to happen after that. Are Haylite going to be prepared to put down a fairly substantial deposit in the event of caverns collapsing? And you've no doubt seen the crater, which I couldn't believe the size of when I first saw it, near height of the Hill Farm. You know, suddenly, as I understand it, that opened up. And I'm assuming you have seen it, but it is absolutely massive. And the thought of that happening in our children's or our grandchildren's time, I would like to think that whoever develops it has to put down a really substantial deposit. And again, as you're aware, it's a farm area. It's an area for wildlife, and the project will have a major impact on that. That's about it. Apart from, I'd just like to say, I understand that some of the representations you've been to have been very sparsely attended. Over Wire, and maybe to a lesser extent in Fleetwood and Thornton, because they feel maybe it's not going to have a major impact on them, but it will. But generally, people, we've had this for 10 years. I think this is the third time I've sort of talked to a panel. Public speaking is not something I enjoy, but I do feel very strongly about the topic. And I'm also conscious that people have really got battle fatigue. The fact that the hall is not full this afternoon, I think people are feeling it's not worth it. You know, that if they don't get this application, they'll get the next or the next or the next. It just seems to go on and on and on. And for that reason, I do hope the IPC will recommend refusal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can I just sort of take you back to your first point, just so I'm sort of clear about the nature of your that element of your objection? What is the difference between the facility being used for short-term gas storage on the one hand and long-term on the other? If I understood correctly, your concern was that if this were used for short-term gas storage, then it didn't represent a national need, but if it were used for long-term gas storage, that was a legitimate national need.
I think that
need.
Is correct. I think maybe not so much the existing application, but a great deal was made initially of the national interest. Now, to my mind, the national interest is when, I say, the gas taps are shut off from wherever we've got to import gas. I'm conscious of the fracking that's going on and the hope that we can be independent of other suppliers, but ignoring that for the time being. The national interest is when you've got a storage there which you can draw on in the event of supplies being cut off. Using it as a facility just to sort of straighten out variations in 24-hour or weekly demand, that's being used as a facility just to make up the supply, nothing to do with the national interest.
Right. So if it were used solely for national interest reasons, as you put it, then you have less of an objection. Is that...
If I really thought it was... But there again, I don't, because... I take the point you're making.
Yes.
But I do feel that there are other facilities which have been approved, and
yes,
Portland and Barrow are two of those, and they're fine. They're off... You know, they're not near 80,000 people. They're well offshore, and if the need arose, they could be filled, left, and if supplies ran short through import restrictions, then it's there. That is in the national interest.
Yeah.
Day-to-day trading is not, to my mind.
Okay, yeah, I get the point. Thank you.
I'll ask a question on that. So in just clarifying the difference between trading and use for diurnal fluctuations in gas supplies, are you seeing those as the same thing? Or is there something more subtle to the use of the word trading?
Gas prices go up and down. I mean, that would bear, like the stock market. You can invest in BP or Shell, and prices go up and down. Some people are better at predicting price rises and falls than others. But I could see it being used as a financial facility, really.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Just to ask, you mentioned there was an accident a short while ago.
Yes.
And the bridge over the River Wye was closed, is
yes.
that what you're saying? So what would be the alternative access to this area in that event?
There isn't, well, apart from there, Lancaster. But if you've travelled... Yeah. Sorry.
Well, yes, go on, please.
If you travel on the road between the Shard Bridge and Lancaster, you'll see it is not an A road, my view. I mean, it's classified as an A road, but it in parts is a country lane.
There is an alternative access, but it's very restricted.
Yes, and you could come over the moss, so-called moss, towards Garstang. But again, if you've seen
very
that,
small.
It's...
Country lanes,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And some of the bumps have to be seen to be believed.
No. Okay. Yeah, and I think, finally from me, you then also drew attention to the quantity of gas.
Yes.
So is your... anxiety about the project in sort of direct relationship to the quantity of gas being stored?
Yes,
I mean, provided all the engineering demonstrates that it's achievable, I mean, what's the, in one sense, the significance of the quantity of gas being proposed?
Well,
if it were half the size, I mean, does that sort of reduce your concern, or is it with the principle of gas storage? This is not a public meeting. As I say, I don't really want contributions from members of the audience. I'm only dealing with the person making representations to us. Thank you.
If it were a small amount, I don't think I'd have such reservations. But if I might read out. It's only a short thing. I used to work for ICI. I was senior engineer in charge of a major hazards plant, amongst others. And the largest vessel on that plant, I mentioned, was 2,500 tonnes. And even though vinyl chloride isn't corrosive, this vessel was subject to regular external ultrasonic thickness testing. And every 5 years, it was emptied, it was decontaminated, and a scaffold was erected inside so that the ICI inspectors could really go over it with a tooth comb. And at the end of that inspection, we could be, you know, as sure as we could be that the vessel was for suitable for further service for a further 5 years. With the proposed storage scheme, the gas is to be stored in an unspecified number of caverns with an unspecified size. And I don't think I can express strongly enough that it will never be possible to inspect these caverns except maybe by a camera. We just won't know what's going on inside there. And this can never be, a camera could be never as be effective as a human being going over it with a proverbial tooth comb. Similarly, it won't be possible to test the caverns above their working pressure for fear of destroying the integrity of the salt. And both these factors mean that normal inspection procedures can't be followed. Yeah. If they were storing 500 tonnes down there, given my experience as an engineer, I wouldn't be too bothered. But when we're not talking about 500 tonnes, we're talking about 650,000 tonnes, potentially going up to 1.3 million or even 2 million tonnes. That is, I know halite expressed things in cubic metres of gas at natural temperature and pressure. I don't know about you, but even as a qualified engineer, I have problems in envisaging so many billion cubic metres of natural gas. But even 650,000 tonnes is a massive amount.
You mentioned in your statement about the local residents becoming fearful. Do you think that's directly related to the size of the proposed gas storage?
Yes, I think, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was present at a last session like this at the North Euston Hotel for the previous application, and there was somebody who was disabled there, and they put over a very sound case. You know, I've no relatives in the area, I do have carers, but how am I going to get out if there were an incident? Mm. So I'm convinced there are people who are fearful, but as I go back to say, I think, to a certain extent, the fact the hall isn't full this afternoon, I think people are getting so fed up with the whole thing and they think it's a foregone conclusion, and I'm sure it's not. Hmm. But that is a perception that is abroad.
The wire way that you refer to, do you have any concept of the amount of usage of that footpath?
No, I don't.
You don't.
I don't think it's heavily used. I don't think it's, but it is a public footpath. Yeah. It is an asset to the area for bird watchers and so on. And I see no way that can stay open next to a major hazard installation. Mm. As I say, both for security and safety points of view.
Good. Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Tucker. Right,
thank you.
Thank you. Could I ask Mr. Pickup, please?
Last time we meet, eh? Right. I'm Roy Pickup, 70 years old, not a resident, came over to retire, and I've been to most of the meetings. I put myself down in the first instance in April, and I spoke at the meeting at the 24th of April in Fleetwood. I would like to read out my summary that I filled in January before the session started. Is that all right?
Well, if it's material we already have, you don't need to repeat it. We have all your
what
all you, the papers.
What actually you're doing, you're putting me, the gentleman who's just spoken, who I have no knowledge of, I've never met him, I'm not online, I'm not on Twitter, I don't tweet. I accept the Overwire group protest. And I said in April, this was my representation. And it is my personal thing. I am a nobody. When confronted by the big companies, but I have a voice. As a householder in the area, I should be heard. This plan is like the sword of Damocles hanging over this area over the last 10 years. Plans have been rejected 3 times by far more qualified people than myself. Companies come and go, again, different guises, new plans, methods, different capacities. The one thing they cannot change is the ground strata that has been here for millions of years. Their promise is like everything else. We know what we're doing. And as I said in April, I cannot find anything what they plan to do when things go wrong. With 900 million cubic metres in stock, they could go wrong in a big way. If only one of the 19 caverns ruptures, 47 million cubic metres under pressure would be released. If this migrated into the underground services without exploding, entire towns would be shut down and evacuated. Within 4 miles of the proposed site, which is now 2 miles, we have gas companies actually putting explosives in the ground. Again, totally safe. Don't worry. 2 earthquakes later, we had to stop. Oh dear. Within the mile of the pre-saw site, there's a landfill, which has been on fire twice in the last couple of years. They have, near to the site at Stanner, there's one of the biggest substations, and shortly there's going to be a power station on top. I stated at the time, I am a nobody, and I'll explain why in a minute. 70-year-old, and if this plan is passed, I may not be around when it's working. The next generation will have to live with it or fight another planning application. And to be honest, the people that should be here are still at school. That was my summary to yourselves at that time. I have studied all the paperwork that you've sent me. Not an easy task, but I've studied it. I have also noted that the number of questions raised by yourselves to Haylight run into 70, 80 things that apparently you're not happy with. I've read through them. I've come up with the earthquake risk. 26th, I think it was, April. 28th of April, 2009, epicentre in Ulverston. Earthquake. 3.2, came right down the coast into Blackpool. And this is not the fracking ones. The fracking are doing tests now on the south side of the mains lane, 585, which at its nearest point is going to be 1 mile south of Stanner. That is very close. In April, I made a statement. Bear with me. Here we are. 2.8. And I said I could not see any reference to safety or what would happen if things went wrong. Given that Fleetwood is a peninsula with one entrance and one exit, I thought that was a major issue and should be looked at. Unfortunately, this has been carried by the gentleman before me. But at the same time, I brought to the attention of the panel that at the time, a gas rig had blown in the North Sea and was still leaking gas. And it did so for about 7 to 8 weeks. They couldn't stop it. What did they do? The big company? They evacuated, didn't they? But not only did they evacuate, they put a 2-mile exclusion zone around it. And the gas didn't disperse because the gas stayed on the sea level. It did not ignite the plume, which cone gas would have done because it's different light. Wait. I then pointed out that I was, for 27 years, on the ambulance service. And during that time, and during training, we were required to attend major incident practices, one of which was the Springfield Nuclear Facility at Preston. The primary object of any ambulance service, emergency service or whatever, is to save life. And the first principle is that you get behind and go downwind. And I pointed out to yourselves that in the case of Fleetwood, Thornton, it would be impossible in some instances, depending where it happened and the volume of gas, but at 47 million cubic, once that goes in an unlined cylinder, I'm advised, you couldn't stop it. It would have to come out. Now, I don't know what Allied are going to do, but they could say, oh, well, we'll vent it. But that wouldn't cure it because it won't go anywhere. If it's the right conditions, it's going to hang about. You cannot drive through a toxic environment with a motor vehicle or any sort of combustion equipment, which means no radios, no anything. Providing it hasn't blown, you're stuck. Now, at Fleetwood, there is no access north, there is no access west, and there is no access east. The only major hospital receiving station is south, which is Blackpool. So, in effect, especially with health and safety, I very much doubt in this day and age that any vehicles would be allowed to go in. Because there's no good going in if you're going to be overcome. You can't help anybody. Getting back to the question to the previous gentleman, access, you pointed out about access other than the 585. Unfortunately, you bear with me, we had a tragedy over here. Not too long ago. Well, I have the date somewhere, but irrespective of the date, at Abbeystead, I was on the ambulance service then, and I wasn't at the scene, I must admit. But access to that site was horrendous. It's situated on the Bowen Fells. And it caused a group of people from St Michael's who went out on an evening run to look on the by United Utilities, the water people, to have a look round the new facility. But what I did see was the aftermath and the destruction in that building was horrendous, with a build-up of gas. As I say, getting to it, getting from it, I thought, when I brought this up at first, yourselves, I think I'll be right in this, that you said that this would not form part of the planning application, and it was down to local authorities. I might be wrong in that. To be concerned with emergency service, evacuation and safety in that respect. Now, I might have got that wrong, but I gather from what you said to me at the time, I'm 70, the memory's going a bit, that it wasn't pertinent to the inquiry. As the gentleman said, nothing is exempt from accidents or problems. And changing the subject slightly, when you think of the things that have gone wrong with people relying on technology, the Costa Concordia couldn't get anything better than that. He's still at the rocks. Blunsfield petrol dip dump in the Midlands. Human error or failure of mechanics. But this and that were above ground. The disaster that followed that. And like the gentleman just said, you cannot legislate for no accidents. But I don't think you can rule out the possibility. And it's a matter of gauging that possibility. And I've been speaking to people like the gentleman who has been in high pressure testing. I am no expert on that. I know about ambulance services and I know about response times and I know about the capacity of the emergency services. That is my expertise, although I have been retired a while. But these people tell me that these caverns will not be lined. And it is purely the salt that is perfecting them. And he's just put the point in that unless they are tested at a higher pressure than the working pressure, which apparently through the industry is the standard, it is possible that with the inflow and outflow of the gases in a trading situation, as we're probably saying, or a storage situation, it is quite possible that you may not detect a small leak until the actual instruments notify you. Now, I like to put in their blurbs a month and another, it's going to create thousands of jobs. But when you read it, and when you break it down, after the initial stage and the final thing and it's up and running, they're saying 40 and 50. Now, 40 and 50 over a full shift is probably 10 people in a control room. If this gas is escaping under pressure before the monitors click in, who knows where the gas is going to go? And I would like to just finish on a lighter note, if possible. I said at the beginning, it's been like the sword of Damocles. And Damocles, the sword, was held by a hair. And it is now a portent of disaster, a portense of disaster. I would like to finish by the fact that in Fleetwood, a few years ago, we had P&O boats. They were at the Irish Sea. And the trade name was Pandora. And going back to mythological again, Pandora, the box was opened. and all the evils exposed. And the only thing that left was hope. And that is what we are left with. Hope that someone can end this nightmare of 10 years backwards and forwards. And it is now said that the Pandora, once activated, will generate many unmanageable problems. And I think that just about sums up Haylite's project. We don't know what will happen. They don't know what will happen. Because in 40 years' time, they're not going to say, there'll be no more earthquakes. There'll be no more tremors. In fact, the government has now said, oh, we'll give these fracking companies tax repairs. It's going to go bigger. Who knows what's going to happen? Might be not in my lifetime. But if it does go, it'll be like something out of the tsunami in Japan. There won't be a building left round here. And that's it.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Please.
Yeah. You mentioned a landfill site nearby. Where is that?
Carla Grand, Fleetwood.
Right.
On Jameson Road.
And
is that still open, or is it closed, or is it still open?
Well, it were open on Sunday.
I don't know.
I don't know whether it's filled or not, but whether it's filled or not, the methane is still there. And like I say, it has been on fire umpteen times since I've been around. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And to be quite honest, people are fed up. Like the gentleman said, we're battle-weary. We can't relax. I came to live over here because I wanted to live over here. I like the people. I like the area. You could say we're NIMBYs. Not really, because this is not in our backyard. It's in the north of England's backyard. You take a 7 or 8 mile radius, and that takes you almost down to the south shore in Blackpool. I don't know whether it'll happen. You don't know whether it'll happen. But we've got an area with main drains, with massive waterways from Fleetwood to Blackpool, so big you can drive a car through. And quite honestly, as I say, the only thing I could find was the Pandora's box. Once it's open, you cannot shut it. Thank you very much.
Can I go back to one of the things you said? When you talked about an earthquake, did you say Ellsworth?
Ulverston.
Ulverston.
The epicentre was in Ulverston. I think I'm right in saying that this...
When was that dated? Do you remember?
28th of April, 09, at 11:20 in the morning.
And can you tell me how strong that is?
I think, and I'm going off memory here, it was registered in the Gazette. I think it was a 3.2. Okay. I can't be 100% on that. But, obviously, it's happened. And also, the North Sea rig has happened. Yeah. It's not fiction, it's fact. And how you interpret it, to be quite honest, you're going to need the wisdom of Solomon.
Good. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other people present who wish to make a contribution, wish to speak? So you'd indicated you might. Yes, please, if you'd like to come to the table at the front.
Yes, please.
We have all the written material in front of us, yes.
So there's no point in me coming to read this?
No. It really isn't. Yep. Okay. If there's no one else who wishes to make a contribution, can I thank you for coming this afternoon? And we'll close this session of the hearing. Thank you very much.